Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Simone Padour, and this is For the Love of Learning, and I have my wonderful co-host, Christine DiDomenico, with me today, as well as our guest, Kristen Trumbull. So, Kristen, I'm just going to read up a little blurb that Christine so beautifully crafted here. So, your topic today is eliminating social anxiety, and this is for people where everyday social interactions can cause anxiety, fear, self-consciousness, and embarrassment. And symptoms may include excess fear of situations in which one may be judged, worry about embarrassment or humiliation, or concern about offending others. So I'm going to give the I'm going to give the microphone over to you, which sounds really funny. But if you want to start off and tell us about your experience and how the access tools have helped you, and yeah, take it away.
Sure. Well, let's see. As a kid, I had just so much anxiety and discomfort interacting with other people. Just, I could do the form and structure of things. I learned how to do the polite, superficial hello, how are you, and smile. And anything that got out of the comfortable box of doing that and what I knew how to do, what had been modeled for me to do, what was something I already knew and had been shown, was just terrifying. And at some point around probably fifth or sixth grade, I pretty much just stopped talking unless someone directly asked me a question. That was more like at school, not necessarily at home. And in as a young adult living on my own for the first time, there would be things like going to the grocery store, which was two blocks away, just down the street. And I would prepare, you know, for 2 weeks ahead of time mentally telling myself, on this day, as I come home from work, I'm going to turn left and go to the grocery store, and I had to have my list of items. I would be really stressed, particularly in the produce aisle, picking out produce. I would be afraid that everybody would be looking at me, and they would know that I was picking the wrong piece of fruit. So, you know, just sort of that level of angst about just basic everyday interactions. I did.
So,
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, so what, before you had these tools, what were you, was there anything that you were aware of in particular that made it so difficult to be out with people?
Early on, I would say it was just being different. And having a sense as, like it for the very first year or two in school, that I preferred different things. I liked to do different things. I functioned with my body in a different way. And I could see that other people were making different choices about how they chose to play or what they chose to do. And that was, for me, there was a sense of that was fine. I mean, I didn't have a problem with them doing that, but I felt so much energy of them having a problem with me being different. And so just a sense of I didn't want to just do what they did to fit in. And yet if I was who I was wrong. And so there was that kind of just closing in to kind of try to have myself and not and be me and not be taken over. But then it did shut out. It shut out the interaction, and it shut out learning how to function in a way that would have been more ease.
So I'm really curious, because I mean, this is something that started me using the access tools, was a high level of anxiety. And so I'm wondering, like, what was your sort of path or journey like? Like, what, when did you sort of go, you know what, this has to change, or this isn't working for me?
I put up with it not working for a really long time. I thought I was depressed. I didn't identify it as anxiety, and I have not had that as a label, although I do get it. It fits, and I have been told that that actually is a better description of what I describe than the depression.
Mm.
But I just like gutted through basically for a very long time. At some point, I realized, okay, I'm not actually going to kill myself, so I'm just gonna get through.
Mm-hmm.
In my early 30s, and I did function. I could do what I required to survive, and I did some of that really well. So there were areas in life, it just was, particularly in the social things or activities outside of my, fantasy world or whatever else was going on, or reading, that it was just always very difficult to interact in that way. My early 30s, I did Prozac.
Uh-huh.
So that was one tool that I chose, and that was the best one I had at the time, and that did help. That was kind of a point at which I went, something has to change. I can't do this anymore. And that did provide some relief, and it was just another box.
So I'm curious, when you say like things that you did really, just particularly well for myself and for anybody who's listening, because I know that point where you make yourself so wrong for the things that you can do, but like, what were the things that actually you were really, or, and probably still are, really good at, that actually this gave you, that was almost a gift in a way? Like, does that make sense?
Yeah. Oddly enough, I was really good at listening to people and being present with them and not judging.
Pretty
and yeah, and I was also good at, in a crisis. If there was something that had to happen, or there was some emergency or something, the anxiety would go away and I would kick in and it would happen. I was functional. I was really good in school. I did that properly. I was good. And I was also good at my job and at doing, well, I guess maybe just good at work. Yeah.
So how was that, going to work every day and having a job? You were good at your job. Did you have to interact with people at your job?
Yeah, different jobs in different ways. One of my first jobs was as a retail. I did a couple different retail clerk jobs in fabric stores. Those, I would say, I was not the best salesperson. And I was really good at dealing with, like, people maybe who didn't speak English as their first language, or who had something where the other salesperson weren't comfortable dealing with them. I could interact with those populations in a way, or who had a cultural difference about how they interacted in the store. And we had a minority population where I had my first job that was from Asia, and they would come in and really fondle the fabrics and pull many, many bolts off and just do this thing that for us was a different way of shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other clerks would be very uncomfortable and put off by that, and I would just flow with that, and it was okay. But the day-to-day sales where you're interacting with people in a more usual way, that was, you know, I was not the greatest at that. But later I had jobs like in doing data and research and working with computers and working with things that had lots and lots of detail and many deadlines and competing priorities and stuff like that. And in that, I kind of thrived. And some creativity where you were, it was matching data across different data sets and coming up with research projects to kind of coordinate all this data together and then write up the paper, and that kind of thing was, it was fun for me, and I could do stuff with that that other people working in the office with me couldn't necessarily do.
Well, I think a big part of this conversation, and you'll tell us more, but is for other people that are dealing with this, is acknowledging those things that you are really good at. Because as you're speaking about working in the fabric store and working with people that are different and do things a different way, what a gift that is to other people. So just acknowledging those talents that might be outside the norm or that we don't even look at, you know, because we're looking at everything that's wrong with us.
Yes, and where we don't see that other people are valuing that as something valuable.
Mm.
So, you know, making it about what the other people value in you is not a happy path.
So was that part of creating some change for you, starting to acknowledge the differences that you were and are?
I would say that helps. I, in many ways, have felt like I've had that awareness all along, and without some of the tools like I've gotten in Access and stuff, that in some ways having that awareness was even more challenging, because there was both this, I know I'm not wrong, but I am wrong, rather than just, oh, I'm wrong. It's like, but I'm not wrong, mm-hmm. but I am wrong. It was really, what?
And round and round she goes.
Yeah, exactly. and then what do you do with that?
Yeah.
You know, if you're just wrong, you can fix something. I mean, or you could change it, or you could, you know. But if you're not wrong, then so anyway.
So how did it change for you? Like, how did you go from, you know, not wanting to go to the grocery store or finding it difficult? Like, what did you find was the most dynamic change with using the tools?
Well, I'll start a little bit earlier and say that one of the changes I made was pre-Access was to move from a city to a small town in Alaska where there was a lot mm-hmm. of nature and not very many people.
Yeah.
And that created a space where the anxiety was still there, and it was more manageable. There
yeah.
was less places yeah. for it to trigger.
Yeah.
Now with Access, the Access tools, I can acknowledge that, oh, I'm like just really aware. And a lot of this stuff, a lot about why it's easier in a smaller place with more nature is there's not as many heads around.
Yeah.
And that all this stuff going on in my head isn't mine. And it's taken, that was not an instant process for me with the Access tools.
Yep.
I still work with that one. And mm-hmm. yet there's more space. It's like first there's this cognitive, for me, there was this cognitive, oh, that actually is true for me, that's not mine. The anxiety might still really be there. I was still very aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it was a little less grippy. And then there was a little more space between me and it, and then more space and more space. And now it's not so much just solidly in me. It's more often outside me, but I'm still aware of it. And sometimes it gets closer and sometimes it's further away, and then I use the tool.
Yeah. So what are some of your favorite tools? Sorry, go ahead.
One of my favorite tools is the energy, space, and consciousness process. I mean, what energy, space, and consciousness can I be? And that's really all I have to say at this point. And just asking, what energy, space, and consciousness can I, it's like, oh, I can be a different space.
Right.
I can be a different energy, and that right there will start to dissipate it. And, you know, I started with that, with the what energy, space, and consciousness can I be to be, you know, fill in the blank with whatever was up in the moment. And as I used that a lot, it's now at that point of just, oh, what energy, space, and consciousness, oh, right, I can be something else, and it shifts.
Huh. I love that. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. We're always looking to clear something.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is it's just knowing that you're being contracted, basically, and I can be a different energy, space, and consciousness.
Yeah, and I can choose. The clearing, the what else, the who does this belong to, doesn't work that well for me as to clear stuff. Like, I'm still aware of it. It's the energy is still present.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing it's not mine is helpful. And what energy, space, and consciousness can I be helps me actually choose something else. Like, it shifts my attention from the energy of the anxiety and the limitation and the whatever that is, to a different space.
So it's not making
this other stuff go away.
Yeah, because that's what I've always tried to do, is like when it feels really funky, you know, I pod-poc, and then I realize it's not mine, and then I'm like, oh, okay, well, it's not mine, and oh, what would it take for me to be an allowance of this, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Sound familiar? And
yes.
But I never clued into this idea of like, what if I could just shift something? And that's so cool. So I'm really grateful for this tool. Thank you. Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. My brain's kind of fried now.
And, you know, all of us have been using these tools for quite a while. And
it's
looking at it from a different perspective is so life-changing, even now.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yes, thank you
there
for that.
There's always these moments where the tools pop in a different way. It's pretty amazing how they change things. The tools change and we change, and it's a miracle. It's a magic.
It is. Now, Kristen, you said earlier on that you functioned with your body in a different way. Can you talk about that, when you were a kid and maybe still?
Yeah. Well, I grew up very quickly. I'm tall, at least, you know, and for my generation, I was very tall. It seems like the rest of the world has now caught up and surpassed me, but that's okay. So I was very tall and I was very skinny. And as a child, felt that I was awkward.
Mm.
I was sometimes acknowledged, like I remember one child acknowledging, like, wow, you sit down so gracefully. Well, I had to have this whole like routine of like step, 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 turn, twirl, fly, dip to even get into the desk. So there may have been a certain grace to that, because it was the only way I was going to fit. But I didn't feel like I functioned very gracefully with my body as a general rule. And there was not, my family was not very physically active. They didn't have time, basically. And so that was not really part of what I did much of. And so my family valued reading. Other kids, you know, maybe valued sports or, like, whatever the reasons and justifications are. Sorry, I just flipped my ear pod out of my ear. But the other, too much hand flailing, a little Italian. other kids might prefer to spend their time out running around on the playground, and then they would be really good at jumping and leaping or crawling under things or doing all this stuff. But, like, I really didn't operate my body very well in those ways, and it didn't seem very fun for me, and it just kind of wasn't part of my world. So, yeah, just kind of like those kind of differences as well.
I wonder, like, I remember something very similar when I was a kid, and I watched all my friends being very bendy and, like, being able to sort of twist their bodies and do that, the sort of apple turnover on the monkey bars. I remember trying.
Yeah, cartwheels, you know?
Yeah, I almost knocked myself out, you know? And I wondered, like, even as a kid, I'm like, how come I can't be a kid? Like, why can't my body do the kid stuff?
Yeah.
So I'm really intrigued, like, because, I mean, my family was fairly active, but it was like this older person in a younger body that didn't really know how to be a kid.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hadn't put that together like that, but I did have a sense of, as a, like, I was a very mature child. I was very, I was very adult. And I'm getting to be more of a child now.
Funny, isn't it? Yeah, true story. Yeah.
But as a kid, I was quite the little grown up.
Yeah.
And what do you get that was about, Kristen? Is there something with the social anxiety that brought that into existence, do you get?
About being a grown-up?
Being a grown-up, not, you know, playing or just something contractive about that.
Yeah, there is. And it's, I didn't associate that, well, different things. I mean, one, I would say just whatever being I am has had a lot of whatever over the years that it came in with and had not completely shut out of its awareness.
Right.
And just the family that I was raised in, whatever universe my parents had was, I mean, particularly my mother, I mean, my parents were wonderful. I don't have bad, abusive family stories of any nature. And they did have some typical parental interactions for the generation that they were, which was Depression era. So there was a lot of focus on creating money for the family and having food on the table and, you know, providing the more physical types of needs.
Yep.
And in particular, my mother, I mean, she never had to say anything. I can remember, like, kind of looking at other families and going, well, like, why do people have to, like, scold their children in the store? Or why where is this whole thing about how to handle tantrums come from? I mean, you just know. I mean, my mother never had to say anything. I just knew how to behave. Like she might say, oh, this is a do not touch store. And you knew that you didn't touch things and you didn't get rowdy and you didn't, I mean, you just, there was no question about, you just knew how to behave.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And both of my parents had professions in which proper behavior was kind of part of the profession. And as a child, my role was to properly behave. And I had that sense of, oh, I need to actually behave or we could lose our income. No one ever said that.
Mm.
And I know that was me being aware of their universes. I mean, I know that now. That's part of Access helping me know and acknowledge what was really going on for me.
So part of what I'm hearing is like the anxiety is that super awareness of other people's worlds, other people's universes, thoughts, feelings, and all that jazz. And I wonder if it's almost like when you do have that awareness and that almost that that caring as a kid, like it's like how can I make this as easy as I can for the people that I care about?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. That's
wow.
That was exactly it.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't making it easy on me. But it
ooh.
Was. Yes.
So I'm curious, yeah, go ahead, Grace.
I was just going to say that the things that you said you were good at, too, you're good in the crisis, you were good in school, you're good at your job, you're good with dealing with people who are different, you're really good at listening to them, being present and not judging. And so in those moments, which we're dealing with people, you didn't have social anxiety. So is that when you were most being you that was a way to eliminate those moments of social anxiety?
Yeah, that was. I wasn't anxious when I was listening to someone or being with someone who was being them. I was never that much interested in being around people who were being, you know, whatever it is that we do, that we think we have to do, but it isn't really us.
Right.
all the chatter about whatever. But if someone was really being them and expressing something that was true for them or that was up for them in the moment that they were having difficulty with, that listening to that and being there was just natural. That did not have the anxiety with it. And at some point I also found a way to make that wrong or at least not work for me as well. So, you know, I'm very talented that way too.
Yeah, we often use our superpowers against us. We're very cute.
Yeah, at some point I was, you know, like I wanted some of that back.
Yeah.
And at that point, then that didn't work so well for a while.
Yeah. I had another thing I was going to ask you, but I can't remember what it was. Yeah.
Well, I wonder too, when you're talking about this being like, being around people who are just being themselves, like how much do all of us, even if we're not dealing with like heavy social anxiety, just not want to be, we're so aware that we don't want to be with the people that are not being themselves or, you know, I get what you're saying about like just being with people that are just doing the social nonsense talk that just doesn't interest me. Like how much of my comfortableness too with people is that awareness.
Yeah. And there's some times and places for that for a little bit. And it isn't where I want to, like, sit for an entire evening.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah. I think that's what I've changed for myself is not feeling like I have to be somewhere for a certain period of time and, you know, for holidays, being there for hours and hours and hours and hours. So
yes.
Choosing things that actually work for me, like going a little bit later. So I don't have as many hours in that situation. Works for me now, and it's
yes.
something that I've changed in recent years that just works better for me, and I'm doing what I need to do for family and all of that, and I'm choosing for me as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've done that same sort of thing too. I stopped with Christmas presents with my in my family. I don't have children, so I feel like I'm not ruining people, my kids, by not giving them presents. But at the point when I realized I'm getting presents for people that are things they don't really want, and they're getting presents for me, they're things I wouldn't choose for myself, and just because it's somehow the thing you're supposed to do, and that was like, you know, let's not do this for me. And, you know, my family was fine with that. So what are some of the other things that you two have found have helped, or what are your tools that you use?
For myself, the expanding out, like if I'm in a crowd, like I used to really panic. When I was, particularly if there was a lot of input, if it was like hot, if there was lots of sound and there was lots of people, I would just sort of panic and want to go home. And I sometimes would go home. Whereas now I can just, you know, expand out, like just make myself that space that I need to be in order to function in that environment.
That's a really nice tool.
Yeah, not making myself wrong if I don't want to go and do something like that. So, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that for me, too, is a big one, that not making myself wrong, not judging myself for not wanting to be with people or not wanting to be with people as long or just being by myself, too. I'm alone a lot more now, and I like it. where before I wouldn't choose that, I would choose all the obligations. And I don't do that. I still do what I need to do for the people in my family, but I don't feel an obligation to do all the things I used to feel obligated to do. And I'm not making myself wrong for it.
Cool.
Yeah, there's such freedom in that. And what I love is like with myself, like having, you know, students or friends, and when they see you doing that, like I didn't really think of this at first, but when they see you doing that, they're like, hey, like I could do some of that, which is kind of cool. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering about kids, if we could talk a bit about that, how we have a lot of kids in school that have anxiety and just giving them the tools. First of all, acknowledging that you're different, I think, is the first step. Although I guess you know you're different. So not making yourself wrong for being different. And what you said, you didn't want to just fit in, just do things to fit in.
Yeah, I think for me, I knew I was different, and I didn't know I was different. There was this element of I didn't understand why other people chose what they were choosing, because there was some assumption that they were just like me.
Yeah.
And, I mean, for real, I was probably in my third or fourth decade before I finally started getting, oh, wait, it's not just that other people are the same and making different choices, which never made any sense. It was like, well, if you're operating, you know, in the same world that I am, the choices you're making are just weird. Like, what's up with that?
Yeah.
But actually, yeah. actually getting, oh, they're not even, they're in a different reality. They're not
yeah.
like me making different choices. They're actually different.
Yeah. I remember that in elementary school, it almost in clockwork, every day at about 1 o'clock, some drama would kick off amongst the girls and somebody would end up crying in the cloakroom or something like that. I just remember watching this and thinking, like, number one, what the heck are you guys doing? Like, how is this entertaining? And also, you do it every day. Like, doesn't this get old for you? And at the same time, feeling so different that I was like, I must be wrong because I can't do what they do because I would hate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like that. I actually liked to be around the boys more than the girls because of that. I didn't get that drama either. And the,
yeah.
you know, talking about each other and all that stuff that showed up in high school. It's just like, I think I'll go hang out with the boys.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I guess, too, I'm just getting now that I was more able to be myself with them, too. I didn't have to put on this facade of
yeah.
being...
Yes.
the girl,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. I didn't hang out really with any kids very much, particularly after maybe 7 or 8. But as an adult, I found, like, particularly in workplaces, that working with a group of men was much more ease than working with a group of women.
Mm-hmm.
It just, they're just straightforward and you know what you got.
Yeah, like you don't, when they say, you know, I'm hungry, it does no deeper meaning.
And they actually had better social skills and just,
yeah.
which was surprised me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's bizarre. And do you know what,
it
though?
Is.
It's interesting that you say that because I remember when I was teaching kindergarten, the little girls particularly would come up and tattle, usually more than the boys.
Uh-huh.
And I would say to them, have you told so-and-so that you didn't like what they were doing? Well, no. It's like, well, how were they supposed to know? So we actually became a practice to talk to the other person, particularly for the girls. And the little boy, I remember the particular situation, he was like, oh, I didn't know, I'm so sorry. And the little girl was like, oh, it's okay. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, that was easy.
Yeah.
So I
well,
wonder, too.
Just,
yeah, go ahead, Christine.
I just read an article yesterday about that, teaching kids to actually solve their own problems. And it was about
mm-hmm.
little kids, too, where this woman was suggesting to have them identify, is this a small problem, a medium problem, or a big problem? And then asking just depending on what kind of problem it was in their perspective, well, what are your choices now to change this? And I don't think that's a skill that we teach kids.
No.
So that was,
no.
I loved reading it.
Yeah.
Yes, that's great.
Yeah.
And I wonder
yeah.
if that would be a great tool to teach kids with social anxiety, too, that
mm-hmm.
What can you do to change? Like, what are you aware of, asking that question, and what can you do to change this?
Yeah.
Along with giving
yeah.
tools, yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder too, like, because for myself, some things were so, like, such a mountain that I couldn't possibly face, but like giving people just little steps sometimes to go where they need to go. Because sometimes it just, it seems insurmountable with that anxiety.
Yes.
So what other, are there any other tools that you found that have worked for you, Kristen?
I love the ESCs that Dane does.
Mm.
He had one two or three years ago that I called Space. It was a fairly short one. It was one he gifted. And I played that over and over and over and over and over. I looped that at night for a long, 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 long time. And that, I've played it over 1,000 times, 1,500 times, 2,000 times or something, as iTunes informs me. And that would just create more ease and space for me. And you know, then since then there was another one. Like I now have another one that I have played almost that many times. So see,
yeah,
and, yeah.
So for people that don't know what that is, that stands for Energetic Synthesis of Communion, which is I guess I best describe it as a meditation type activity where you can. You can lay down and listen to it, but you don't even have to lay down and listen to it. And it creates more space in your world for you to be more connected to yourself and more connected to everything around you and creating more space like Kristen talked about. And I believe you can purchase some of those on the accessconsciousness.com website to listen
to. Mm-hmm. Yep. And there's also a few... Yeah. To Access Consciousness SoundCloud, there are little excerpts, like shortened versions of ESCs too, that you can look up and play that give you lots of nice, yummy space in your head.
Yeah. And so you could, if you're a parent of a kid who has social anxiety or upset, or even if they're just upset at some point, if you put that on low volume, it'll just play and the energy seeps into the room and into the being and can create a huge, huge difference.
Yep.
Yeah. And for me also going outside and asking for the contribution from the earth or running the restoration of earth body, restoration of communion with earth body process. Another one? Bars, of course.
Yes.
That's probably number one.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about, like, going out in nature and things, because that was one of the first things you said about, you know, giving yourself more ease was not living in a city, but being in the countryside and.
Yes. And somewhere, it was odd, I've always just hearing people ask, you know, why did you move from Kansas to Alaska? I'm like, you know, Kansas was just, it was not my color scheme. And that, you know,
yep.
That was largely true. The gold and the heat and the brown and, you know, whatever that energy there, it's beautiful in its way and it contributes a lot. And it just, when I first visited Alaska and it was blue and green and white and it was just like, space.
Sure.
And it was at one of the 7-day classes, access classes that they had in New Zealand, where that land there was the first time that I really felt a physical in my body sensation connection with being with the trees there.
Mm.
And kind of really a more, not just like an energetic, space sense, but an actual, I'm actually communicating with this tree in an energetic way and with this land.
Yeah.
And then having the perception of that and acknowledging it and then being able to bring that home and practice with the landscape that I live in as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that you say that because, I mean, I've been sort of looking around at, you know, different areas that I might like to live and in the county that I live in. And it's so interesting. You can drive like 5 miles or less and there's a shift. And all of a sudden,
yes.
I notice my body like sighs and is just like, I am so good here.
Yeah. Well, and I've been just shocked to notice now that when I travel for access classes that, like, I was just in New York City for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been, like, that was one of the places I was never going to go. I just, like, had no desire to go there, and it just sounded like the worst place to be. And I loved it. It was, I had such ease. I walked around downtown at night by myself, downtown, I don't know, wherever we were. I enjoyed the energy there, and I enjoyed being in Rome.
Mm.
And I'm finding that I actually like a little more of the urban buzz now.
Yeah.
Like, almost being home now, there's not enough going on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's one of the changes I'm noticing, which is quite surprising.
Well, that's funny that you say that, because I experienced the same thing. I mean, I used to live in Canada with lots of space. And I can't live there anymore because there isn't enough going on, which before I did Access, I don't think that would have been the case. Like,
I've noticed that too with when I was looking for places to live, it was, very obvious to me when some place just didn't have the energy that I wanted to live.
Yeah.
And then when I found the place I did want to live, it was so very clear. And even not just going into the actual home, but even going in, driving into the area that was going in, that it was like, the energy here is not what I'm looking for. Yeah, and then I would go another place, and this I get a sense of more of the energy that I'm looking for. And they might have physically been similar, but their energy was so different.
Yeah.
And even, this is a really strange thing, but where I live in a condominium complex, and there are speed bumps. It's a pretty big place, and there are speed bumps. And, you know, I go over the speed bump slowly, and they put in a new speed bump a couple of weeks ago. And it's a really, really harsh speed bump. It's not like a roll, just like a curved mound.
Yeah.
It's sharp. It's got sharp edges on it. And I said to my son the other day, this has really taken down the quality of my living. Just going over this bright yellow harsh speed bump. But the point I'm making here is like we do have choices too in how we receive things. We have choices of changing things. So like the place we want to live, the people we want to be around, the circumstances we want to be around. And then there are the places where we can't choose. Like if I'm a kid and I have to go to school every day, I don't have a choice. I have to go to school every day. But these, what we're talking about are these tools that allow it to be greater ease when you're in circumstances where you don't really have a lot of choices.
Yeah. Well, and even if you
kind of go over the speed bump to the edge, so I only have to go over with one tire.
Oh, you're funny. Well, I find even when, like, you're in a situation where you may have chosen something, like I chose to go work in the Middle East, which it was not easy for me and my body. We didn't really have the best time. And at the same time, like, I knew I was there for a certain period of time, and I was able to make choices that would give me more ease, like taking salsa classes, for instance, or eating really tasty food, or, you know, spending time creating things. So even in the moment where you may not be able to change it right away, you may be able to make different choices to make that transition more EJG, ease, joy, and glory.
Yeah. Well, I was excited to hear your story about liking New York City, Kristen, too.
Yeah.
Together in New York City.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I'd like to visit again. And I just, that was just the, I mean, like, that's one of the things that, I mean, one of the biggest tools access that I've gotten from Access is just, like, to get to the classes that I'd like to go to has required me to step out of the many things that I've thought I would never do, like go to New York or go to New Zealand or go anywhere internationally, really.
And they're very motivational
that way.
Yeah, and I wonder how much when we do have difficulty with certain situations where we just do totally cut it off, rather than being in the question of, like, how does it get better than this and what else is possible. And when I was teaching, I would talk to kids about going into your stretch zone and how much do we not want to stretch, and we keep ourselves contracted because of past experiences.
Yeah.
That if we would, you know, step out, would create greater ease too.
Yeah. And it's the travel for me is still one of my main markers of how much I have changed.
Oh, that's cool.
Every time I travel, I get more information about this is so much easier. Like, I'm no longer stressing about having overhead bag space. I can talk to the person. I just talked to the person in the seat next to me and had fun. I initiated a conversation with the person in the seat. I mean, like, whatever it is, it's just every trip I can observe where I am interacting in a way that is different and more ease than sometimes I have the opportunity to notice when I'm just at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So we have about 7 minutes left. Is there anything else that you'd like to share, or tools, experiences? Or just tell us about how people can reach you. And if you have anything coming up with classes or whatever you want to tell us.
Yeah, and mostly I would just like to say that you can change situations and energies and the things that are not working in your life. It may not be easy. It may be easy. And some things can be really easy, and other things will feel like you're just never going to get there, and that's all okay. For me, the Access Tools have been a huge contribution in having the awareness that change is possible.
Mm.
And there are lots there are a lot of things and a lot of tools, and find what works for you and use that, whether that's access or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the best way to reach me is through the accessconsciousness.com website. I do have a page on that website that you can find under facilitators. The personal URL I have isn't working currently because of the new website update.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, I don't recall what the new direct link is. But if you go to accessconsciousness.com and under facilitators and search for Kristen Trombel, that's probably the best way to find me. You can find my contact information and then send me a message through the site, and I'd be happy to communicate from there. And if you'd be interested in hosting a class in your community, I facilitate a bunch of different things that you can find on the website, and I'm happy to travel.
Cool. I have to say, Kristen, one of my favorite things about having you on the show and chatting to you in general is the space that you be. Oftentimes, I find that when I'm around people, particularly people that don't do access, and even people that do access, it's like a constant chatter in my head. And and like so many times during this conversation, I'm just like, oh, I'm just happy to stay silent and sit here. And Christine knows that I'm not normally like that. So I'm very grateful.
Thank you for that. Yeah,
that's such a gift for people. And also the point you made about that it can change, like everything can change. It's possible to change this if you're dealing with social anxiety. And to me, that's important for people to know when they're dealing with something that just feels so unsurmountable. So thank you for that.
Yes. And that they are not alone. I mean, they're truly not the only ones. And that's another thing I'm just getting is I do know people that I can Skype or ask a question or ask for help when something is icky.
Yeah.
Because I still sometimes will lose sight of that, and it's like, cool.
Yeah.
Those people I like to be around, I know that.
That's
just that space that you be is cool. Really inviting.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome. And next week, I'll just say a little bit about next week. We have Sylvia Puentes is coming to join us to talk about Right Voice for You with Kids. So I'm excited about that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. We are so lucky to have all these cool people on our show, aren't we, Sloan?
We are. It's amazing.
Very grateful. Very grateful for the invitation to be with you today.
Yay.
We are grateful for you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And for our listeners, you can hear and listen to all the archived shows at blogtalkradio.com/ For the Love of Learning, and love is spelled L-U-V.
Yeah, and there's some amazing shows on there. I listen to them again often. Well, thanks again, you two. And we'll see everybody. Well, we won't see them. We'll hear them next week.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.